Hi, I'm Dana Stevens, Slate's movie critic, here with a Slate spoiler special podcast on The Town, the new Ben Affleck crime drama. With me in the studio is John Swansburg. Hello, John.
Good to be here.
And yes, this is you were born for this spoiler special because you are from Boston, born and bred, right?
Yes. Well, I should say for people who are actually from Boston, people like to say they're from Boston. They usually mean they're from the greater Boston area. And I grew up on the North Shore. But I did live for 2 years in Boston proper, as they say in Boston, in Charlestown, which is where this movie takes place.
I guess what we most need to know is that Ben Affleck, who directed, co-wrote and stars in the movie, plays Doug McRae, who is the son of a legendary bank robber, who's on his way to becoming a legendary bank robber, an armored truck holdup robber himself.
Right. After failing in his attempt to be a professional hockey player.
Right.
And apparently he had the talent, but he sort of pissed away his chances on drugs and by just being a bellicose fighting guy.
Right. And so at the beginning of the movie, he's long past the hockey career and
right.
is building his bank robbery career. And he's the head of this gang, the only member of which we really need to know about for our purposes, although I do want to talk about the character Glonesy so I can say the name as often as possible.
I love Glonesy.
There's a fat guy named Glonesy who can hotwire cars very well, who's sort of minor. But the major other gang member is played by Jeremy Renner. His name is Jem, the character
Jem,
name.
Yeah.
And Jem is sort of There's a character like him in almost every gang movie, right? He's
right.
The hothead guy who at any moment could go off, right? The one who enjoys the violence just a little bit too much.
Right, and indeed in the first bank heist that we see, which is basically the first thing we see in the movie, there's of course another stock character, the kind of like bank manager who is maybe sort of making a move towards a silent alarm, and Jem kind of, you know, delivers first a kind of a blow to him to sort of prevent him from acting up, but then just kind of goes off and just smashes his face repeatedly with the butt of his rifle to the point where blood is flying everywhere. And it's just, you know, it's obviously a scene that's meant to set up that this guy is unhinged.
Right.
And he's murdered somebody, right? He's served 9 years or something for manslaughter.
Right. Although we should move on to the romance now, because the central right. spine of the story is this romance between Ben Affleck's character and Rebecca Hall's character, Claire,
right.
who is a bank manager at the first bank that they rob in the movie. And I feel like that movie asks for such a suspension of disbelief in terms of these guys' moral valence that I could never come around to believing they were honorable bank robbers. Not even Ben Affleck.
Right. It's totally ridiculous. The movie opens with they hold up a bank in Harvard Square, and they end up taking hostage the assistant manager played by Rebecca Hall.
Why do they do that exactly?
Never clear why they do it. She actually does. So she like manages to trigger the silent alarm with her foot. And I think either Ben Affleck or Jeremy Renner noticed this. It's impossible to tell who's who in the course of the bank robberies because they're always wearing masks. In that instance, they were wearing kind of like ghost masks. But she triggers the alarm, so they're kind of pissed at her. But they decide to take her hostage, but for no good reason. They just got to take her with them, drive her around Boston in a van, and then ultimately leave her in South Boston, you know, down by the World Trade Center for no apparent reason. It just doesn't make any sense other than to set up the idea that she's this kind of loose end that, you know, does she, you know, did she sort of see it? Would she be able to recognize our voices? Did she see anything? So Jeremy Renner wants to rub her out. I mean, he's so crazy. He's like, basically, we gotta tie this up. We gotta knock her off. But Affleck doesn't want to do that. So he volunteers to sort of go. They have her driver's license. I guess they took her wallet among the rest of the things that they stole from the bank. And he suggested he'll go track her down and make sure that she's not acting suspicious. So he kind of follows her into a laundromat. I don't know, like sees her, you know, she can't find enough quarters. She asks him if he has any quarters to spare. Somehow in that exchange, Affleck develops a soft spot for this girl and asks her out for a drink as opposed to, you know, asking her some probing questions about what her knowledge of the events that she just suffered was. And she very weirdly says, okay, this is supposed to happen like 3 days, 2 days after the bank robbery. She's obviously traumatized by what happened.
She's like weeping in the laundromat over her bloody shirt that she's washing.
Right. And some random, you know, townie comes up to her and is like, let me buy you a drink. And really, you know, Affleck's character, Doug, does not make – He's not a prize. He's like wearing a tracksuit. He's Affleck's a handsome guy, but – There's no effort made to like make him charming in that moment. Like he tries to comfort her, but not in a particularly suave or tender way. And she's like, "Yeah, okay, I'll get a drink with you." I don't know. I mean,
and as you pointed out, I mean, her character that doesn't make us believe anything about her character or know anything about her character, right? She's right. essentially just the girl who agreed to have a drink with Ben Affleck.
The big problem, I think, that we agree with this movie is that a really important part of the movie is this romance between these two people that is just – the movie makes no effort whatsoever to sell us on it, right? I mean, I just didn't buy it.
Right.
If what you want to do this weekend is see an amazing movie about bank robbers and the city of Boston, you should see The Friends of Eddie Coyle, which the Criterion folks put out, I think, about a year and a half ago on DVD. It's one of my favorite movies. It's about a band of bank robbers and about a small-time crook, and it's set in 70s Boston, and it's neck and neck with The Verdict for being the best movie set in Boston, and there's an amazing scene at the old Boston Garden. I can't say enough about it. It's great. And I was so excited for the town because I thought maybe Affleck was trying to do something like that. And I think he was in a way.
Who directed The Friends of Eddie Coyle?
Peter Yates, who directed Bullet. Mm-hmm. It's great, and it was very hard to find for a long time, but now it's on Criterion, and it's just Dana, I'm going to give you the DVD so you can watch it.
Oh,
it's
what
so,
a great plug.
Yeah,
I've never seen it.
It's so great. I really, listeners, go see that movie. It's great.
Wow, this is like added value for our spoilers. It's excellent.
Yeah.
All right, before we wrap, I want to talk about performances because that's really – I mean, it was what drew me to this movie in the first place. It has a really big and pretty impressive cast, and I think it's right. worth talking about Affleck, Renner, Chris Cooper, different people who appear.
Absolutely. I thought Chris Cooper was great. I mean, we see him for
– In one scene.
He plays Doug's father, who's serving, I think, a life sentence for a bank job that he did. I think he must have killed someone in the process, or maybe they just put him away for all these robberies. But he's pretty great, he seems like he's unrepentant in a way, and he kind of Doug goes there, sort of hoping, I think, to learn more about what happened to his absent mother, but the father refuses to kind of sugarcoat the history, and I don't know. I thought he was pretty awesome.
Yeah, he brought a lot to a pretty minimal part in the movie.
Yeah, maybe wish he was actually more – he wasn't in Walpole or wherever he was and was actually more a character in the movie.
Chris Cooper is never bad. I mean, there's no movie that he's in is entirely bad because at least it has a Chris Cooper scene.
Yeah, and I think we both really liked Jeremy Renner.
Yes. Oh, yes. I want to talk about Jeremy Renner for sure because I actually feel coming out of this movie, although it's not like he blew me away in this movie with his performance, it just made me feel like he's a major emerging presence.
Totally agree. Yeah, he too was given, you know, less to work with than you might have hoped, but there's such an intensity. He really sells that unhinged nature and
which is not unlike the Hurt Locker character that he played, right? Way less
right.
complex, and he gets less screen time and less good lines to say. But
yeah.
but that moment where he has this kind of Jimmy Cagney public enemy moment at the end where he, spoiler, goes
right.
down in flames. He basically kind of dares the police to shoot him rather than be taken in.
Right. So wait, one thing we haven't done is we haven't sort of – the movie kind of falls apart at the end with this like one last heist. Of course, this being a sort of – a bank movie, bank robbery movie that is not afraid of sort of trotting out all the old cliches. The movie ends with kind of one last big job, and the one last big job is, someone who grew up in Boston, I find this highly amusing, is robbing Fenway Park. I think somebody even calls it the Citadel of Boston, or even the Citadel of New England. You know, of course, like I was sort of torn about that, but it was sort of utterly ridiculous and also kind of awesome to set a bank robbery in the bowels of Fenway Park. And as far as I can tell, a lot of that was actually shot, you know, either on Lansdowne Street or in the environs of Fenway, and indeed inside Fenway. So any Red Sox fans out there, you know, will enjoy that, although it's sort of a ridiculous thing. But the movie ends with this kind of huge shootout in Kenmore Square. And that's the, sort of the end of which Jeremy Renner's character does kind of go down in flames, as you say. But that whole let's rob Fenway Park part was a little bit ridiculous. And if we want to fully spoil things, actually Doug's character manages to escape, which is even more surprising.
Right. And there's another cliche, which I mean, if I wasn't so annoyed at the movie at this point, I would have sort of almost admired it for pulling out all these cliches. But
right.
we actually see him having grown a beard in exile and staring mellowly out at some bayou or something that he's escaped to.
Right. And not only that, we sort of get the sense that Claire eventually finds out, thanks to John Hamm's FBI agent, that her beau is actually the guy who took her hostage and, was responsible for beating up
and
her boss.
And she underreacts so severely.
Yeah, sort of like, oh, like that's annoying.
I mean, she does say get out of my apartment the next time she sees him, but she doesn't stick with it.
Right, right. And she doesn't – she says get out of my apartment, but she's not like – that adamant about it. You know, she's sort of like sitting in the bathtub.
And she has her cell phone. Remember, she's holding her cell phone. She says, I've dialed 911. Like, she's just about to hit talk or whatever and call 911. And you're thinking, well, why on earth would you not do it?
right? This guy,
man throws me into a van blindfolded at gunpoint, right? Makes me think I'm going to die for an entire day. Then comes back and picks me up in a laundromat and lies about it for, I don't know, weeks, months.
Right.
Pretends to be my boyfriend. I mean, Jesus Christ, you would move.
You'd be, yeah, you seriously, you would definitely move. You at least move to Somerville, if not to Peoria. But it made no sense. She obviously, you know, the idea is that she's fallen in love with him. And then so at the very end of the movie, after the whole Fenway thing kind of goes sour, Affleck returns to Charlestown, despite the fact that he must know it's crawling with cops, and goes to some place where he can sort of see into Rebecca Hall's window, and calls her and sort of says he wants to come over and visit and just talk to her. And she's surrounded by a huge bevy of FBI agents. And she says, yeah, you should come over. But then at the last second, she kind of gives him a hint that, in fact, he shouldn't come over because the place is crawling with the fuzz. But it's like so weird because, of course, Affleck knows that this woman who the FBI now knows is his girlfriend is going to have at least one FBI person there, if not 10 or 12, which is actually the case. I guess charitably we could say that he's calling her to find out like whether or not she still loves him, because he wants to know whether she'll give him that sign that the cops are there, don't come.
Yeah, it's a symbolic call about their relationship. He's obviously not going to go into the apartment because he can see, which is another plausibility hole, that the FBI agents, it wouldn't have occurred to them to not stand in the bay window while she's having a cell phone conversation with the guy who lives in the neighborhood.
Yeah, totally ridiculous. So anyway, Affleck makes off with like a bunch of cash from Fenway, and he buries it in a local community garden that Claire is known to tend.
Right, because we've been seeing throughout the whole movie that she's this like kind of community angel, right? She volunteers at the community center, she gardens.
Right. So this is one of my favorite pieces of ridiculousness that I think kind of gets at some of the real silliness of the movie. So Affleck decides to, with his score, which looked to be maybe several hundred thousands of dollars, I don't know, at least tens of thousands of dollars, which is in a hockey bag, he buries it in the community garden in a place where he knows that Claire will be digging soon, I guess. And in the bag of cash, he puts an orange
to signify that he went to Florida.
Right. He's you know, going to wait for the heat to die down in the Everglades, grow a beard. No one will ever know it's him. And the idea – so then we see this scene at the very end of the movie where Claire is troweling in the community garden. Just so happens – it's a pretty big community garden. Just so happens she trowels in just the right place, finds the hockey bag full of cash. Now, meanwhile, this has happened, we know, relatively quickly because the orange is still in the bag and looks ripe enough to eat. Like, it looks like – peel that sucker. Like, it looks
nice and fresh.
It looked great. So somehow she knew to do
– I love that the orange really bothered you. The subway ride home, you're saying, why is the orange still fresh? What are the chances?
It doesn't make any sense. There's no effort made to look like there was like, here, you know, here lies the cash. Why would she be digging there? Wouldn't the orange have been if it had been completely desiccated, that would have been kind of interesting.
And then I provided an alternate ending, like the last shot of the movie, it's old woman digs up moldy orange.
that would have been awesome. So then, the coup de grace is, okay, she somehow manages to dig up the cash in under a week, and we don't know what she does with the orange. I think she should have eaten it. It looked fantastic. But with the cash, it's been set up that there's a sort of rundown community hockey rink in Charlestown, and we've seen it in his rundown state. And the last, if I'm not mistaken, the last shot of the entire movie is Claire kind of sitting in the stands, beaming as a bunch of Charlestown youths are practicing hockey in a completely refurbished community hockey rink, which clearly would have taken probably tens of thousands of dollars to get from where it was to where it is. And we're given no indication of how exactly this middle manager at some, you know, Harvard Square bank would know how to take tens of thousands of dollars and launder it in such a fashion that she could donate it to the Boys and Girls Club of Charlestown. It doesn't make any sense.
Or like the FBI wouldn't notice. Like, remember that victim who protected that that criminal? Why did she just renovate an entire hockey rink?
Yeah, exactly. John Hamm's character knows at the end that she's in cahoots to some degree with Doug. He did not enough that he can prosecute her, but he knows. So you don't think anyone's going to pay attention to her when her bank account all of a sudden balloons by, you know, 7,000% and when she makes an incredibly munificent donation to the local hockey organization? It doesn't make any sense.
See, this movie is made for spoiling. Actually, yeah. Even more than spoiling, I love plot hole exploration.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
It's totally great. I mean, look, those things bothered me when I sort of sat down and thought about them with you on the subway ride home. But in the context of the movie, this movie was more or less enjoyable to watch. Particularly
that just all adds to this fabric of implausibility. It's not that you're thinking about those things during the movie. It's just that it keeps you from really caring about and entering that world.
Exactly. But then when I really think about Ben Affleck, when I kind of get angry at him, I try to sort of step back and put myself in Ben Affleck's shoes. Now, I grew up in the Boston area like he did, and if I in the beginning of my professional career had written or co-written Good Will Hunting and had all of a sudden been rocketed to fame and renown, I think I might have done exactly the same thing that Ben Affleck has done. I think I would have tried to date J-Lo. And then I probably would have taken a role in G-Glee, not realizing that it was as bad as it was. And then I definitely would make a bank heist movie where I got to rob Fenway Park. Like, what Boston area resident would, you know, if given those opportunities, would not take them? So I really can't get mad at Affleck. I think he's made completely logical decisions. I just wish that and I do think that he's becoming a more serious actor and director with these movies, even though they haven't quite lived up to my hopes and dreams. So
I love that you would have taken the low road, the J-Lo road.
Totally. Come on.
Would you now be married to Jennifer Garner with
no,
two daughters?
No, we part ways there. I think it's totally defensible, but she doesn't do anything for me. But robbing Fenway Park, come on. That's like every Bostonian's, you know, dream.
All right, John. Well, thank you so much for seeing this movie with me and coming in to spoil it.
My pleasure.
Our producer is Tage Jensen. Our executive producer for Slate Podcasts is Andy Bowers. For Slate.com, I'm Dana Stevens.